Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email.
Thank you for talking with Carol the Coach. Hey, I am Carol Jurgensen Sheets. I get a lot of interesting emails. There's no doubt about it. And I got two very interesting and important emails last week, and I said that I would address them on the show. Now, you know this show is about sexual addiction, and oftentimes I interview the experts in the field of sexual addiction. So you get to hear not only from me, but you get to hear from people that have written books, that have workshops, that, you know, they put together treatment centers. I mean, this is an amazing place to get more information. And tonight I'm going to be interviewing Paul Hartman. And Paul actually runs PathwayToHealing.com. And if you want to talk to him, you can always email him at paul@PathwayToHealing.com. Now, he has a mission. He actually has a double mission, and that double mission is first, to help the addict get sober, stay sober, and progress to deeper recovery. Now, that includes healing past and present trauma wounds, exploring family of origin issues, helping clients with their emotions that may be repressed or stuffed. He will work with a client to reduce shame, claim self-esteem, and he wants you to live life as a functional adult. And if you're the partner, he wants you to know that he also understands the wounding that has occurred in the relationship. Whenever sexual betrayal has occurred, it has to be healed. Good news is, if as a couple you want to preserve the relationship, he can help teach you the way to actually rebuild safety, connection, and trust. And he says, you know, if the addict establishes consistent relapse-free sobriety and the partner chooses to believe that the partner is a new person in recovery who's honest and trustworthy, well, then they can actually build a better, a healthier, and a more sober recovery together. So he says, hey, with willingness, help, and hard work over time, that new relationship can be better than anything that that couple has ever had together, including going back to a time that predates the addiction. Wow, wouldn't that be inspiring if that could be you and your partner? So this show tonight is inspiring in that it's going to help both the addict and the partner to build trust and, of course, hope, strength, and recovery. He's going to be talking about what is sexual addiction, what's sexual sobriety, how do you get to that, what's the best way, time, avenue to do couples work, and then issues that are always tough, like do you use a polygraph? Now, you know my take on that. Polygraphs can be very, very helpful. So I'm looking forward to Paul coming on the show, and he'll be on in just a few minutes. In the meantime, like I promised, I always read your emails. And I received an email from Donna. She says, I have been listening to your podcast for over a couple of months now. I'm married to a sex addict whose acting out has escalated rapidly over the past 27 months. He has sought treatment in the past and stuck with it for quite a while. Unbeknownst to me, he stopped going to his certified sexual addictions therapist, and 5 months ago I caught him in bed with his high school girlfriend, whom he had hooked up with after their 30th class reunion last summer. Boy, she says, this was the last straw for me, and I filed for divorce after 37 years of marriage. In the meantime, she's learned lots of sordid details about his addiction, and she's devastated. So devastated that she says she's recently been diagnosed with PTSD. Our family has been ripped apart, and our 18-year-old daughter will not have anything to do with him at all. That is how this disease can absolutely tear up a relationship. And I'm so glad that she's emailing me. Donna, I just admire you for doing that. Donna says, I've read virtually all the books about sex addiction, recovery from sex addiction, partners of sex addiction, you know, blah, blah, blah. She says, I actually am resentful that I know more about sex addiction than I ever wanted to know. And yet, she says, she's still looking for information about things like sexting with escorts. And she says, I have completely stopped spying on him when he seemed to be serious about his recovery. But once I filed for divorce, I went into the detective mode and found that he was using bank accounts that I didn't even know about and cell phones that I also didn't know about. He had actually grown very, very lazy about hiding it. And she said he has nearly spent $20,000 on sexting with escorts. She says, so, Carol, I want to know. Clearly, escorts are not going to spend hours only texting with somebody for free. How much do escorts charge for this type of service? And please help me fill in this gap in my knowledge bank. Okay, well, Donna, first of all, I got to tell you, you've already decided to leave this. You've asked for the divorce. You have post-traumatic disorder, stress disorder, so come on. It is time for you to create your own life. And I know you're asking the whys. You feel like if you could understand all the whys, you'd be able to put the pieces together. But Donna, I got to tell you, you're going to drive yourself crazy. It's time to stop. It's time to heal from the betrayal, heal from the wounds that have been caused. Stop the crazy private eye diagnostic behavior and imagine what your life would be like if you could let go and let God and move forward in your own life, you and your daughter, and feel good about life. You don't have to know any more about this dark world. Now, I got to tell you, I did throw it out to my listserv. 1,600 certified sexual addictions therapists, and I got not one response about the questions that you asked me, you know, which is how much does this cost and what's the pricing and the trade activities, all that stuff. There are no books that I'm aware of. There's no information I'm aware of, but even if I did, you said you've read all the books. You've done your homework. It's time to let go and move on. And I want you to do that, Donna, because you will not have the life you deserve until you do. And I get that as a partner, the wounding is so great that you keep feeling as if you were able to make sense of it, get information, make some understanding, that you would feel better. But since you've already decided to leave him and you are in that process, it's time to let go. And it's time to concentrate on your own self-care and your daughter. So that's what I'm going to encourage you to do, Donna. I did my due diligence. I tried to get information for you. I couldn't. And I, you know, thought to myself, hey, if this were a woman I was working with, I would be working diligently to get her to grieve, to feel the pain, to look at, hey, in any way does this reinvent for you some past traumas that you had as a child? If it does, we'd be working on that. If it doesn't, I'd be asking you to feel the feelings, grieve them, and then figure out how to let go. And I know that in itself can feel very, very unsafe. Because when you make the choice to let go and let God and forgive, then what you have to determine is, are you ever going to be able to trust again? And that in and of itself is the scariest part, because you never want to be duped again. You never want to be betrayed. And if you're going to be betrayed, you want to know about it, right? I know. That's how it works. But I'm telling you, it in and of itself is not going to be enough unless you really work hard on redeveloping your own life. So again, I so appreciate you emailing me. I want to encourage anybody who has a question to email me. But I also want you to know that so oftentimes I tell my clients, when will you know if you've had enough? And when you are sick and tired of being sick and tired and you can no longer stand the pain, it's time for you to create some healthy boundaries and take your life to the next level. Now, if you've ever read Facing the Heartbreak, it's a partner's book, and it's a workbook on how to create your own boundaries. It has exercise after exercise, because this is the hardest thing to do, is to let go of the anger and to move on in your own life. So that's what I'd encourage you to do, Donna, and I know that you can do it. I so appreciate you sending me that email. Now, if you were with me week before last, you know that I had started answering a very lengthy email. And I will be addressing that next week. You know, she emailed me after I had started talking, and she said, you know, I listened to your podcast last night, and you validated everything I was thinking, and I am devastated. I am so disheartened, but I now have a clear path for myself. Obviously, there's much more to our story than what I was able to provide, but you gave me some guidance and, oddly enough, hope. Yes, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to educate you and to give you some hope. as to what you can expect and how you can control your own life when it seems like your life is out of control. That is my job. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and they call me Carol the Coach. You can go to my website, which is Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and get all the information, many of the podcasts, lots of my writings. I just encourage you to get as educated as you can. I mean, that's why I have the experts on. That's why I've got Paul Hartman on. I mean, he is a person who has made it his mission to help the addict get sober, stay sober, and progress to deeper recovery. And, you know, that can be oftentimes the hardest thing to do. So, Paul, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for helping us to understand what recovery means to you. You've really devoted your whole life to recovery. Is that not true?
Yes, that's true, Carol. Thanks for the nice introduction, and I'm pleased to be here with you and your audience tonight.
Well, I'm so pleased to get your information because oftentimes you're providing workshops that are for the addict and or couples to help them to get healthy. I mean, I really like the fact that you're aware of the entire family picture, and obviously your mission is to help the addict to get sober and to find recovery. But it's even a deeper recovery so that they can have a healthy relationship. So tell me a little bit about how you got involved in this field.
Yes, that's a great question, and it's exactly what I'd like to lead off with. When I'm talking to a potential client for the first time, and I'm trying to help them understand the kind of work that I do, I like to refer to a range of treatment options. And I'm going to refer to that now. In this range, on one pole, we would have what I call traditional therapy. And that would be the 50-minute hour. And typically, the addict would go in week after week for that 50-minute hour, and sometimes that client would do that literally for years. On the other end of the treatment spectrum, we have residential treatment. And these days, the format for residential for sex addiction is usually a little longer than what we're used to seeing in the old 28-day model for treating alcoholism. Most inpatient programs for sex addiction are a minimum of 5 weeks. Many of them are 6 weeks, and often they extend even to 90 days. So there's your range. Traditional therapy, 50 minutes a week, and the longer-term residential. I was involved for many, many years in the traditional model, and my greatest frustration with that is that it just took so long for the client. It took so long for the client to reach their goals. And so I was looking for something faster. Now, one advantage of going to residential is that oftentimes the addict can achieve goals faster as a result of going to residential. The problem, however, with that, as most of your listeners know, is that insurance rarely pays for inpatient treatment these days, especially for sex addiction. And so the question is, who can afford it when they have to pay $1,000 a day out of pocket? And who can afford to be off work for 5 or 6 weeks and still have a job to come home to? So that was the problem. And that
it becomes a very practical issue of whether you can afford it and whether you can afford the 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes even longer recovery that you need in a residential treatment center. So you came up with something that was a little bit more innovative. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and I described it like this because I wanted everybody to see that my model really fits right in the middle there. I call it an intensive. It's much more intensive than the 50-minute week of traditional therapy. It's certainly short-term compared to residential. And I want to be careful here because my programs are as brief as 3 days. My longest programs are 5 days. And I don't want to sound like I'm claiming that I've got the ability to cure people in such a brief period of time. That's not at all what I'm saying. I am saying that I'm saying that I have developed a program that can help addicts and couples really establish a solid base and jumpstart recovery. And then the key to it is what do they do after they finish their work with me? And everybody leaves my program with an aftercare plan, just like clients do when they leave residential. They leave with an aftercare plan. And that, so success is based on will they follow the aftercare plan? And so that's why I hope I'm making this crystal clear. I'm not making unbelievable claims about what we can do in 3 days, but I'm saying we can help the client get started, and we can send the client home with an aftercare plan that's going to involve doing things every single day. And in some ways, it's almost like being in residential treatment. And I've been doing this since, for almost 30 years. And my experience is that clients that do this are the clients that get sober and stay sober.
Absolutely. Now, you know, I'm sure our listeners are wondering, what are some of the things that you would expect from aftercare? What are the recovery tools that you would want somebody to follow through with?
Well, again, perfect question, and I want to go to that next. The thing I should say all the way through this is I follow Patrick Carnes' model very closely, and I think you actually had him on as a guest about a week ago. Am I right on that?
I sure am. And, you know, I follow his recovery task toolkit also, so keep
right.
going.
So
our
some,
listeners
some
are pretty
answer.
Familiar with that.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm sure your listeners, some of them tuned in last week and listened to Patrick Carnes. Some of what I have to say is going to sound very much like that, and it's because I've known him and worked with him for such a long time. My experience with Patrick Carnes goes back to the early 80s, and particularly through the 80s when he was doing his inpatient program at Golden Valley in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And then in 2005, I actually started, I closed my private practice and I worked full time with Patrick Carnes. And I had a lot of different roles with him, but primarily, I was working with him in as a key person in the training for certification for therapists that wanted to be certified as specialists in treating sex addiction, CSATs. So anyway, I just wanted your audience to know that I have that background. And so back to your question, what would aftercare look like? And here I'm going to go directly to Patrick Carnes' model. He calls this the recipe, and this is actually, he didn't just dream this up. This is actually something that comes out of long-term research. Back when he was at Golden Valley in his very first residential program. And as one of the conclusions in this research is that here are the things that people did after they left treatment and stayed sober. And the thing that's impressive about this study is this was a five-year study. So in this field, 5 years is considered long term. A lot of treatment centers do what they call outcome studies, and sometimes outcome studies are as brief as 30 days, and rarely do they even go a year. So Patrick Carnes did this study that went 5 years, and here's what he learned. These are the five things that addicts that left treatment and stayed sober did these things.
Okay.
They did daily meditation. And I make a big deal out of this in my programs. We began doing meditation right in my program. And a lot of clients have never done this before. So I want them to get some experience with it when they're still with me. And then they often say, gosh, I'm so busy in the morning. Do I have to do it in the morning? And my answer to that is, I do think morning is the best time to do meditation, but the important thing is to make it part of your day. And if it fits in better another time in the day, then, again, the key thing is meditation. Number two in his recipe for sobriety, and he actually calls it the recipe now, is 12-step work. And I know you know, but for some of your audience that may not know, when we say 12-step, we're primarily talking about the original 12-step program, which was Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
Patrick Carnes, and again, this is research-based, he said if it doesn't matter how much time the addict spends in residential treatment, once they're back out in the real world, they need a community of support. And the best community of support an addict can ever do, in our opinion, is 12-step. And so that would include meetings, that would include having a sponsor, that would include working the steps, that would include doing service work. So all of that is part of it. And I explain this carefully. This is where I would say if there's a problem with getting the addict to comply with the aftercare, this is the thing that addicts don't want to do typically. And one of my slogans is recovering people do the things they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to do that, they do it anyway. Because addicts that do this stay sober. Addicts that don't do this don't stay sober. So number two is 12-step. Number three, they still need an individual therapist. In my type of work, I'm not applying for the job of being their long-term therapist. I do this short-term intensive work. And then they go home, and most of them already have a therapist at home. Most of the people I see fly in from all over the country, and they were referred in by a therapist in the first place. So they return to their therapist, or if they didn't have a therapist, they return home and get a therapist and continue the deeper work that they need to do now that they're sober.
That it needs to be, if at all possible, a certified sexual addictions therapist. And if you go to sexhelp.com, put in your zip code, you can find somebody who's closest to your area.
Yeah, very good. And So that's a good resource. Sadly, there are still places in the country that don't have CSATs. Now,
correct.
Patrick Carnes and his whole team is training these therapists to become CSATs. They're doing this as fast as they can. So we have increasing numbers every year. But, for example, I had a man come to one of my intensives actually this past winter while I was doing my work in Florida. And the problem is he was a rancher in Montana. And so when he said, there are no CSATs in my area, that wasn't an excuse. That was a fact. I mean, he would have had to go all the way to Denver, I think, is the closest, and that would have been about a four-hour drive one way. So we still get into that problem, but most of your listeners
Although, Paul,
are in
you
places.
And I know that if somebody's going to a 12-step group, they can find out who a good therapist is, even if they aren't a maybe it's a therapist
yep.
who's on recovery or has a lot of expertise with the recovery tools.
Yeah, that's a great way to find a good therapist, is from other recovering men who are in 12-step.
Got it.
So then the other, just to wrap this up, the final two things, I'm still responding to what you asked about aftercare.
Absolutely.
Even with all this therapy and 12-step, Patrick Carnes still recommends group therapy. And I want to clarify that for your listeners. There's a difference between self-help meetings, which is what we're talking about with 12-step, and group therapy, which is professionally led by a therapist. Those are two different things. And, yes,
mm-hmm.
we're saying that a recovering addict needs both for a while, not for the rest of his or her life, but in that first couple of years when living sober is a new way of life, they need both 12-step meetings and group therapy. So and the final thing for these newly recovering addicts who are married or in a committed relationship, they need to do couples work. So I've just listed five things. Very often when I'm explaining this to a client for the first time, before we're finished, they're starting to feel a bit overwhelmed. And it's not unusual that my client will look me right in the eye and say, hey, don't you know I have a life? Because it sounds like I'm just creating a plan for them that's going to take full time every day. And that's not really the case. But I do say, you know, we've come up with something that's going to be an effective substitute for inpatient. And so, yes, this is going to take some of your time every single day. And addicts that do this stay sober. Addicts that do not do even one piece of this are the addicts that relapse.
Oh, I 100% agree. Now tell me, because do you believe sexual addiction really is a disease in the same way that other addictions, such as substance abuse, are a disease?
Yeah, I definitely do, and again, as I offer my opinion on this, let me remind your listeners that I've been doing this for about 30 years. I think
mm-hmm.
we're one of the things that I respect about Pat Carnes particularly is when he first came out with his research, it was very controversial back then. I'm talking.
Oh, I know.
He did the research in mostly in the late 70s. He began to go public with it in the early 80s. and he did a lot of public speaking. He did a lot of television presentations, and there he really, really went through a tough time for many years of other professionals attacking him and basically saying, there's no such thing. So I often refer back to those days when Dr. Carnes was kind of a lone voice in the wilderness, and I say he fought the battle for us. He did the debate, and I'd like to say the debate is over. The debate about is sex addiction actually a disease? I'd like to say the debate's over, but sadly it isn't. There, let me tell you sort of a funny story on this topic. There's a really good movie, and if any of your audience hasn't seen this, I strongly recommend it. The movie is called Thanks for Sharing.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yeah, really good movie. Mm-hmm. I forgot if it came out in 14 or 2013, but it's relatively
Came out in 2013.
Yeah, okay. So there's a line in this movie. I'll just make this brief. One of the stars in the movie is Gwyneth Paltrow, and she's in a relationship, and this relationship is really taking off. I mean, it looks like it's really going to work. It looks like it's going to be a real commitment in long term. And the guy in the story is a recovering sex addict. So he's agonizing about, someday I got to tell her. Someday I've got to tell her this part of my history. And so he finally gets up his courage, and there's a scene in the movie where he tells Gwyneth that he's a recovering sex addict. And she responds by laughing. She just breaks up laughing. And, of course, he's deadly serious. He can't understand why she's laughing at I'm a recovering sex addict. And then when she finally quits laughing, she says, is there really such a thing? I thought that's just something men said when they got caught. So
kidding. You know, my line from that movie is when she looks at the lead, and he's got a phone. And, of course, he has a flip phone because he does not want a smartphone. He doesn't want porn in his pocket. And so he's got the flip phone, and she looks at him and says, what's with the flip phone? I mean, she just thinks he's so times. She didn't realize that was a recovery tool. He was taking that temptation out of his life. I loved that line. It just showed, you know, if people don't know, they don't know.
Right, and so that's a great point you're making there, Carol, is one of the things that I help addicts do is identify their triggers. And in the example you just gave, the trigger would be any kind of porn or chat on the Internet. And, of course, he could have been carrying that around on his smartphone. But in order to eliminate that trigger, he didn't even have that. He had the old-fashioned flip phone. So that's not only an interesting line from the movie, but it's a real good point here for your listeners.
Well, and you know, Paul, I always send my clients out with a request that they at least do 8 out of the 10 recovery action plans. And one of those 10 is to have filters on their phone, on their iPad, to have flip phones as opposed to smartphones, you know, to do whatever it takes to make it tougher so it gives the brain more time to really weigh the pros and cons of immediate gratification. And so filters are a very important component to recovery. And certainly I work with a lot of, well, not a lot of men, but I'd say probably 10% of the men and women that I work with say, I don't believe in those kinds of things because if you can't do it by yourself, you're not working a good recovery program. But truly, I feel like it's whatever works for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. That statement about self-reliance is and that's why I meet so much resistance about recommending 12-step. And, you know, there's actually some research on this, too. I forgot the doctor's name that did this, but he's out of University of Chicago. And typically, sex addicts really are above average on being highly intelligent and high functioning. So mm-hmm. in other areas of their life, they've been very successful many times. Now, let me not lose sight of the fact that in addiction, a lot of us are brought down and have to hit bottom, sometimes rock bottom, before we start to recover. But my point about referring to so many of these people as high functioning, one of their greatest attributes is their self-reliance. And I remember using that phrase with a client just in the last couple of weeks, and he said, "Oh yeah, I am fiercely self-reliant." And that goes to what you just said about that there are clients out there that just don't want to do anything where they have to say, "I need help." They want to do it all by themselves. And, of course, we know that's exactly what doesn't work. So I got a little off track here. Your last question was...
I wonder if you really feel that sexual addiction is a disease the same way that substance abuse and other addictions are a disease.
Yes, yes. I was just going to go back to that. And the thing that I said, Patrick Carnes already fought the battle, the debate's over. And the debate could have been, we've got alcohol, we've got these substances, and clearly they are addictive. But sex is a natural drive. You know, it's not like alcohol. I mean, sobriety for alcohol is simple. I don't want it to be insulting to any alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if you're an alcoholic and you're sober, that's a tremendous thing. But I'm just saying the definition of sobriety is so much simpler with something like alcohol, because the definition is you are totally abstinent from alcohol. And there is no minimum daily requirement for alcohol. Sex, on the other hand, is a natural human desire, natural human drive. So the question comes up, is abstinence, if we're going to follow the original AA model, which I do, is abstinence even realistic? And the answer is yes, because we're not talking about total abstinence from all sex. We're talking about the addict needs to identify that part of his or her behavior that I call problematic. The sexual acting out that is problematic for a married couple, for example, sex outside the marriage, that's what we're talking about, is being totally abstinent from the sexual behavior that's problematic.
Uh-huh.
Now, I should also throw in, even at the risk, people don't like to hear this, but sometimes for the sex addict who's brand new to recovery, brand new to sobriety, sometimes it is necessary for that person to make a commitment to celibacy for a short period of time. I want to make it crystal clear here. that I'm not coming on your program saying the sobriety is celibacy. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying sometimes, for when I say short time, short term, maybe 90 days. Again, Pat Carnes, with his residential program, would actually require everybody going through the inpatient program to sign a celibacy contract for at least the period of time that they're in treatment. So there is a role for celibacy, but I'm talking about long-term sobriety. I'm talking about sobriety where the recovering person can have a fulfilling sex life and still be what we call abstinent. We're still following the AA model, because the abstinence is everything that the addicts identified that's problematic. And of course, that's...
Oh, I 100% agree. And let's face it, that's a wonderful way to calm down the brain. So, you know, and it can feel real scary to hear, oh my gosh, as if there weren't enough things being taken away from me, to imagine not being able to have sex. But it's so important in that brain neurocircuitry where we're really trying to calm things down.
Exactly. And the other thing, although you didn't frame this as a question, Carol, I've heard you make reference to the brain about three times here. And it's so important for us these days to whatever addiction we're talking about, addiction is a brain disease. And I've made reference to having done this work for a very long time. So I'm getting older, and I'm not going to be doing this much longer. But I am so grateful that I'm still healthy and still active in my profession at this point in time, because we're making more advances in understanding and treating addiction right now than we made all the way from 1935 when AA started up until the present time. And it is primarily because all these advances are coming out of medical technology. And, you know, in the old days, the only way we could study the brain was on autopsy. Now with brain scans, we can actually see how a living brain works. And, for example, a researcher out of Rutgers, Helen Fisher, did a study a few years ago that's so interesting. And she... her subjects for the research were a group of graduate students who were in new love relationships. And she compared those brain scans to another group who were crack cocaine addicts. And the brain scans were identical.
Isn't that fascinating that you would think that a substance addiction would be different than a process addiction, but what we're finding is no, as a matter of fact, it isn't.
Right, right.
Still lights up the brain in the same way.
Yeah, right. And I think the reason that some addicts, especially we're going to focus here on sex addiction, they have so much trouble getting sober and staying sober. And more, I think we can show medically and scientifically, the problem is you're not doing what you need to do for a long enough period of time to give your brain a chance to heal itself. The good news is the brain can heal itself, but it does take some time. And if all I'm going to do is skate through a six-week program and then go right back to my old way of living, my brain didn't heal. It was maybe beginning to heal, but I'd rather quickly go right back to using the same old neural pathways that were lighting up my brain the whole time I was in my addiction. So this is a key thing. The phrase I often use is, we're in recovery. We're not just talking about sobriety. We're talking about healing your brain.
Right. Now, right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to hear the many years, but, you know, we're talking about brain plasticity and really reforming some of the neurocircuitry in the brain. And I know a lot of people wonder if their brain were to get fixed, would they be healthier? And you do a lot of talking about sexual sobriety and so is there a tie-in between the healthiness of the brain and sexual sobriety?
Yeah, I don't know if this is what you were implying in your question, but what I read in between the lines there is, and this would be, I would call this classic addict thinking, is that when I heal my brain, I can go back to the things I used to love to do because it made me feel good. And so I'm going to get to a place because of what these people are saying about healing the brain. Once I've got a healthy brain, then I don't have to be so focused on abstinence. Well, we've still got a lot to learn about that, but I'm sure what's going to show up is that it isn't going to take very long. If I'm doing the old drugs or doing the old behaviors, I'm just very quickly going to go back to firing up those old pathways that got me in trouble in the first place.
That makes total sense. So now, let me just ask you a couple of questions, because I know our time is running short. And
oh, okay.
You also work with couples. So when do you believe it's the best time to begin working with couples and actually doing couples work?
Right. I'm so glad you asked that, Carol, because, number one, I knew we were running out of time, and this is the one thing. If I only say one thing about couples work, this is the thing that I want to have a chance to say. And, you know, I've used this word debate. One of the ongoing debates professionally is exactly the question you just asked. When should the couple start couples work? When is it too soon? You know, I'll bet a lot of your audience are the spouses of addicts. It's my experience that typically it's the spouse that gets involved with doing the research and learning all about it, and more so than the addict. So, so the spouse gets involved with researching and really gets to be sort of an expert on addiction and learns about couples recovery, and then maybe gets excited about doing some work. And oftentimes it is the non-addict spouse calling me for more information about a couples program. And then after I've talked for maybe a half an hour explaining it and answering every question, she goes back to her local therapist, who says, oh, no, it's too soon. Well, that's what I meant by ongoing debate. My wife does this work also. She's also a licensed therapist and CSAT. We believe, and again, this comes out of almost 30 years' experience, the addicts that do the best are the addicts that do couples work, and they start that couples work as soon as they are sober And when I say sober, I mean relapse-free. They are sober, and their spouse is willing to do the work. So if that's 90 days into it, that's when I'd say to get started. And, you know, you could have a whole panel here. And if you had a panel of eight people, you might get eight different answers. But this is our experience with it. Basic, to sum it up, I'm saying the sooner the better. The catch being, I wouldn't even want to accept a couple of my program if I knew the addict wasn't sober yet. At that point, I would want all the focus to be on the addict and getting sober. But once sobriety's been established, boom, do the couple's work. The sooner the better.
Totally makes sense. And certainly then you're looking at addressing the needs of two people that are in two very different places, and that in itself is so important. Now, can you explain co-occurring addictions and addiction substitution? A lot of my addicts want to know the difference.
Right. Well, they're two different things. And back in the early days of Pat Carnes doing the CSAT training, one of the things he used to present then is the results of some other research he did that showed that a very significant number of sex addicts actually have multiple addictions. And the statistics, I'm not going to break it down here because of our short time, but it comes out to a total of 83% of sex addicts have at least one other addiction. Sometimes, of course, it's more than one. And when I was working with Pat and actually teaching this stuff, I used to joke at that point, and I'd say 83% have multiple addictions and 17% are in denial. And, you know, everybody would chuckle about that. But and it is only a joke. I mean, there are a few sex addicts, and it's just a single addiction. But the important thing that I want to try to get across to your audience is, if there are people in your audience who are brand new to dealing with this disease, and if there are people out there who are going to maybe even look for a residential program to help them get started, it's essential in this day and age that you go to a program that diagnoses and treats the co-occurring addictions. For example, there are still programs out there, I'm not going to name names here, but there are still programs that do a really good job on treating alcoholism. But they don't even touch sex, they don't even touch sex addiction. And I said I won't name names, but there are two that are very prominent, that everybody out there would know these names, but they're so specialized. And the problem is, if we ignore, if there are co-occurring addictions and we don't treat both of them or all of them, this is where the relapses come from. So,
well, I 100% agree about that. And you know, the sad part is, and this is certainly what Pat Carnes dealt with early on in his career, is that I work with some addiction hospitals that won't even recognize sexual addiction for fear that they'll lose their not-for-profit funding, or that their philanthropic donors will be scared about sex addiction and they'll pull out their funding. And so it becomes a political issue as opposed to a treatment issue, and That in itself can be so disheartening because
that
we all know.
That's so true. So I said I'm not going to name names on those that don't treat everything, I will name names of some that do. And that is, Pat Carnes is back at the Meadows. You know, he left there for a while. He's back there. They do a great job of assessing and diagnosing. And when there are multiple or co-occurring addictions, they will treat all of it. And so, again, if somebody's considering inpatient, this is an essential thing to look for. The program that Pat recently left is the Gentle Path program, which is part of Pine Grove down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. That program is still up and running. And it's basically Pat Carnes' program that he went in there and designed and got started, and then he moved on. But they do a good job of treating co-occurring addictions. There's one other one I'll name, which is called The Ranch in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I frequently refer to that one because they do a great job with treating alcoholism. They do a great job with treating sex addiction, and they also do a great job with treating trauma. We haven't had time really to get into that, but most addicts have a trauma history. So this would be another thing that we could overlook that then would come back to bite the addict and end up causing relapse.
Well,
because,
Paul, you know, it is so apparent that you know your stuff. I mean, you have been there almost from the beginning, and you've constantly educated yourself. You surrounded yourself with the masters, and you have so much to offer. Unfortunately, we have to end the show. So I want to ask you if, once you get totally moved and settled, if you'll come back on the show and talk about that trauma and talk about attachment disorder and talk about couples and, of course, your intensive workshops that you have to offer. I want to remind people that they can contact you by either going to pathwaytohealing.com or they can email you at paul@pathwaytohealing.com, because you've got some amazing intensives that you provide throughout the year, and I would encourage people to sign up for those if they really want to catapult their recovery, so to speak.
Yeah, catapult's a perfect word for that. That's exactly why I do what I do. So thank you for that little commercial at the end there. And yes, I'd be happy to come back. So let's stay in touch and figure out a date that works for both of us. And there's so much more that we could have talked about. And
I know we could talk for a whole 8 hours on this. It's just so fascinating.
Sometimes, you know, I go to Al-Anon meetings. And one time I was talking too long in an Al-Anon program, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, "You're in the wrong program. You should be in Al-Anon." So,
I certainly don't think so.
When,
not
when
at least
I,
on my radio show.
Back, when I come back, I'll have to make sure that I don't do Al-Anon.
Well, thank you so much, Paul Hartman. Again, for my listening audience, anybody that wants to take a look at the programs he offers, go to pathwaytohealing.com, and we will definitely have you on. Start looking at the end of May or June, because I look so forward to getting to talk with you further. You have a great week.
Great. This has been fun for me. Thanks a lot, Carol.
All right, Paul. Take care.
Bye.
All right, that was Paul Hartman, and obviously you can tell that is a man who knows his stuff. How exciting to be able to have worked with Pat Carnes from the very beginning. Okay, well, we do have to end the show, and again, as you always hear me say to you, you know, there will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. Next week, we have another fascinating guest who is going to be talking about intensives. And so, I mean, intensives can be the way to go when you want to catapult your recovery and you don't necessarily want to be gone 5, 6, 7 weeks, and maybe you just don't quite have the money to put into residential, but you know it's not enough what you're doing in terms of your therapy with your counselor, your 12-step work, and your recovery. So we'll talk with you next week, and again, thanks so much for listening, and as always, face your fears head on and create the life that you deserve. Have a good one.